Pat Barker's new novel, Life Class, opens as the summer of 1914 is darkening into war. Three somewhat aimless art students, Paul, Kit, and Eleanor, spend their time wandering from class to cafe to an English country house, ignoring at first the clouds on the horizon. Soon they will all be caught up in the war. Barker, of course, won the Booker Prize for her earlier work, The Ghost Road, part of a trilogy also set in the World War I era. She joins us now from the BBC studios in Newcastle. Welcome, Pat Barker.
Hello, I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. We are all fans, and I think everyone is wondering why World War I has such a terrific and compelling hold on your imagination.
I think it's mainly because of the landscape of that war, which was so desolate. And by the end, there were stretches of the French countryside and the Belgian countryside where literally nothing grew. And there were no birds because there were no trees. And I think that has always seemed to me to be the essence, not just of that war, but potentially of all wars. Potentially that landscape is a post-nuclear Holocaust landscape.
So it has a lot of modern relevancy or, you know, a dreaded future scenario.
Yes, I do see it as extremely relevant to the present day. And I wouldn't be interested in writing about it if it wasn't. I'm not somebody who sits in libraries and, buries herself in the past at all.
You have, however, often used a sort of scaffold of history to put your characters upon. You've modeled these characters on real life people. Who are they?
The real life people in this particular novel are the generation of Slade students who were there immediately before the war.
Now, Slade, I just want to interrupt. I'm sorry. Slade is the art school that they're at London.
Yes, it's the University of London Art School in Gower Street. And they each have people they resemble. I mean, Paul Tarrant, my character, is a little bit like Paul Nash, the painter. And Eleanor is a little bit like Carrington, who later on became part of the Bloomsbury group. But they are not actually twinned with their real-life counterparts, not in the least. I use the real-life counterparts as a starting point, but then my characters go off in dramatically different directions.
Well, your book, you send them off to the front, and the action really intensifies there. Both of the young male artists show up in Ypres, in Belgium. Kit Neville says he's going to paint the war. Paul Tarrant wants to be an ambulance driver. At first, he's an orderly in a field hospital. You have written of this hospital so vividly that I was wondering if you would read about it for us. I felt like I was walking the corridors, or it's not even a corridor, just an open sort of pit with a roof over it, with Paul.
An hour later, the black clouds are overhead. The wind rocks and shakes the roof. Rain pelts down, sending waves of turbulence around the room. Outside, ambulances roar, cough, hiccup, splutter, stop, unload the wounded and drive off again, churning the mud in the turning circle to thick brownish-black cream. By mid-afternoon, every available space in the hut's been filled. Paul, Lewis, and three other orderlies move up and down the rows of stretchers, cutting men out of their uniforms, washing them, ignoring their pleas for water if they're going to the operating theatres, letting them have it if they're slight wounds who can wait, or beyond hope. The most severely wounded moan on the edge of consciousness or lie in ominous silence. Continually throughout the day, the procession of wounded comes. Each time the leading stretcher bearer holds the door open, a current of cold air rushes in, damp and brackish smelling, as if even the outside world's underground. And the gust of wind flutters the papers in Sister Bird's hand, and lifts the edges of the blankets.
You know what was so amazing for me in that passage? Not only its resonance, but that you even had the wind whistling through. In this novel, Life Class, I mean, you've started with the students painting from a nude model. Now Paul is bathing the wounds of men desperately tortured. How is he changed by that experience? How has his painting changed?
It improves, I'm afraid. The war becomes a muse, because before the war, although he is talented and actually hard-working too, he has no vision. And he's found it very difficult to find any kind of individuality in his own work. And it actually is on the verge of giving up when the novel opens. And then he goes to war, and the war makes him as an artist, at the same time as, in a sense, it almost destroys him as a human being. And his friend and rival, Kit Neville, says to him at one point, you know, this is a Faustian pact, because his work too is flourishing on the war. And yet he knows, he's prescient enough to see that after the war, nobody will want to look at these kind of images again for a long, long time.
Now, Eleanor has taken a very different path because she is opposed to painting the war, and she falls in with Lady Adeline Morell and her Bloomsbury crowd, another real person. They're famously pacifist, rigidly pacifist. And Eleanor says that war isn't a fit subject for art. She says a bit more than that, too.
She says quite a lot more than that, but that, yes, that is her basic contention, is that war is not a fit subject for art, and particularly that kind of war where people often, even before conscription, people often had very little choice about whether they took part in it or not, because the public pressure to do so was so great. And her feeling is that war, that war in particular, was accidental suffering. And an artist's work should be what he or she chooses to give value to, not something that has randomly happened to them. In her mind, it would be rather like painting a train crash endlessly simply because you happen to have been involved in a train crash. Obviously, as a personal level, it's of enormous importance that you have been, but it isn't necessarily of any artistic importance whatsoever, because it's not a chosen experience.
There's a lot that we learn in life class, and I think that the name of the novel sort of suggests that. When we reach 1915, and I don't want to give away the ending, but I will say that Paul and Kit survive, I felt like the war wasn't finished with them, that they had been changed a great deal, but it was only the beginning.
Inevitably, I think, because there they are of military age, and they, as time goes on, they will be conscripted. So, no, they have 3 years to go. And that is what one of the saddest things about those two, I think, is that they have already experienced so much of the worst of what the war has got to offer, ahead of the other people of their generation. And yet it's by no means over. I do feel, though, I think it was Siegfried Sassoon who said that after the first 6 months, things no longer make the same impact on you. So actually it was your first 6 months of experiencing this terrible conflict that changed you.
It seems as if the experiences of artists hold a particular meaning for you. I mean, you mentioned Siegfried Sassoon and, of course, Wilfred Owen, and these people have appeared in your earlier works, and now this group you're writing about here are artists. Is there something about the template of imagination which makes war particularly vivid for artists?
Yes, and for poets, I think there is. I'm very interested in the predicament of people who are given their voice and their subject by war, because very often they actually hate it. And yet it's a very strange position to be in, to be dependent for your artistic inspiration on something that you hate.
Well, Pat Barker, Life Class is a very stunning novel. Thank you for sharing your insights into it with us today.
Thank you.